You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
9/11 may be the most documented day in human history, but there are still parts of the story that remain untold, especially in regard to how our government responded. In his new book, The Ground Truth, The Untold Story of America Under Attack on 9/11, John Farmer reconstructs the events of September 11, 2001, and the ways the crisis was mismanaged before, during, and after. Mr. Farmer, a former Attorney General of New Jersey, has drawn upon newly released information and on his work as senior counsel to the commission from 2003 and 2004. The Ground Truth is published by Riverhead Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard.
In all the research you've done into reconstructing the events of 9/11, what do you think is the biggest misconception out there about what happened and how our government responded that day?
Well, I think there's a lingering conception that by the time the third flight was heading for Washington, American 77, that the national command structure had reasserted itself, had essentially recovered from the shock of the attacks in New York and had reestablished itself so that from the president on down, they scrambled the planes from Langley Air Force Base and headed them for Washington, narrowly missed intercepting American 77, and were certainly in position to intercept and, if necessary, shoot down United 93 as if it came closer to Washington. What we found out was, in fact, that none of that was true, that, in fact, chaos was really the rule of the day throughout the critical moments. That, in fact, the military had about a minute's notice that 77 was missing and no location, and they actually found out that there was a problem with 93 after it had already crashed.
And why is that? Is that because, as you say, our national security system had been designed not to share information?
Well, it was certainly the incentives in the system were not to share information. And what I try to do in the book is to tell, to narrate the story, narrate the history of 9/11 the way it was actually lived in terms of years, months, days, weeks, and ultimately hours, minutes, and seconds. And what emerges from telling the story that way is that the system was trying to cope with an emerging threat and trying to reconfigure itself after the Cold War, but simply wasn't unable to do so.
You helped write the 9/11 Commission report. Do you think that there are things about that should have made it into the report that didn't?
No, I think the report was an excellent job by an extraordinary group of people. And with the way we put the report together is we found the facts and we set them forth with no value-laden language. What I tried to do here in light of documents that remained classified with our report but have since been declassified is tell the story as it actually happened and was lived.
But when you were writing it, were there certain things in the official timeline and in the response that didn't make sense to you that you felt you needed to clear up?
Actually, the remarkable part of the job that we did on the commission was reconstruct the day of 9/11. And I actually thought the air defense story would be the easiest part to reconstruct simply because it had been told so many times. There had been TV specials dedicated to it. There had been congressional testimony. There had even been testimony before the commission in its early days. But what we found out was that I actually started writing a public account, an account based on public sources of the timeline, thinking that we'd simply have to verify it, and we couldn't.
That's because the whole thing had been fabricated to make the administration look better than it was?
Well, that's certainly the way it appeared to us. It's certainly the effect of this chronology that had been put out was to make the national command structure look like it was much more efficacious than it was.
What kinds of new information have been declassified since the publication of the 9/11 Commission report?
Significant portions of the tapes that were made that day in the air defense sector between the FAA controllers and the flights. Some of the logs that were kept that day have been declassified recently. So you're able to get a much more complete picture of how the day was actually experienced by these folks.
Despite the fact that some of the things that we were told obviously were told intentionally to mislead us? I mean, these documents, often the government resists releasing information that's going to make it look bad.
Well, there's certainly it had that effect. And there are two possibilities. One is that whoever did, on behalf of the government, the reconstruction of the day was amazingly incompetent in failing to see what was clearly evident in the logs and tapes. Or, on the other hand, they put together a story to make the government look better than it actually was that day.
Do you think that all of the defense failures that occurred on 9/11 could have been prevented?
That's a tough question. And, you know, I'm very conscious as a former government official myself of the fact that hindsight is 20/20. There were efforts being made at various levels of government to try to reconfigure the way things worked. And so it's difficult to say that they should have done a better job when I know they were trying. But the fact is that they failed.
But we were spending billions and billions of dollars a year on our national security apparatus before 9/11. And we're spending even more now. How did all of those intelligence and security systems fail?
It's a combination of factors. Part of it is the sheer data density they were dealing with. We had the capacity to intercept communications all over the world. We had CIA people all over the world. We had military bases all over the world. And the 9/11 hijackers were able to run the gauntlet of all of our security apparatus and succeed.
Well, it has been pointed out numerous times that briefings with names like Bin Laden, attacks may be imminent, were made available to members of the Bush administration, and that President Bush was given a briefing on August 6, 2001, just a month earlier, with the title, Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. You would have thought that we would have been on serious alert.
Yeah, and one of the, I guess, tragedies of the story is you'll see instances like you mentioned, and then it hits the bureaucracy and encounters incredible inertia. And that happened across administrations and across departments.
And all over the country. When Mohammed Atta aborted his flight in Portland, Maine on 9/11, he was selected for additional screening by the computer-assisted program pre-screening system known as CAPS. But all they did was they kept him off the plane while they looked at – did they look at his bag?
It didn't call for that. It called for rescreening of the bags. And the system at the time, despite the warnings that had been given, despite the you can pick up a trail of warnings given to the FAA over time. Those didn't translate into enhanced security procedures that would have worked.
What about the other hijackers? Had they been singled out by the CAP system?
Several of them were. But again, the CAP system was not really designed to do the kind of searching interrogation of them that would have revealed their true intentions.
Well, there were box cutters in their suitcases.
Well,
and they didn't notice that?
At the time, box cutters were not necessarily prohibited.
I have to take off my shoes every time I go on a plane, and the soles are very thin. In fact, sometimes I need resoling. It's obvious I'm not keeping any liquids in there.
Well, obviously, since 9/11, the air defense system has been enhanced tremendously. So, I don't think we need to worry about the same kinds of attacks again. The question is whether we've learned sufficiently from what did happen that those lessons have been articulated throughout the bureaucracy.
My guest is John Farmer, senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission. He's written a book called The Ground Truth. It is published by Riverhead. Don't you say that the U.S. military didn't even learn about United 93 until after the plane had crashed?
About 4 minutes after the plane had crashed is when the air defense sector in Rome, New York, got the notification that there was a problem with it, yes.
So the FAA never passed along word that flights American 77 and United 93 had been hijacked? How can that
be? Not in a timely fashion.
But did they know?
FAA headquarters in Washington received word that United 93 had been hijacked at about 9:36 and did not and actually never – headquarters never passed the word. The word was actually received by the military from one of the local FAA centers.
Did the government try to hide this information from the 9/11 Commission?
Well, initially, we were proceeding by document request, and both the FAA and NORAD certified that they had complied. But when we went out into the field, we found that there were significant records that included this information that had not been turned over. At that point, we went to the commission and they authorized subpoenas.
Part of the narrative of 9/11 is that the passengers on United 93 overpowered the hijackers. But you reviewed the tapes and found out that wasn't true?
Well, there was certainly a major revolt, and I think it's fair to say that the passengers aboard 93 heroically caused the hijackers to crash the plane.
But they didn't go into – they didn't overpower the pilot?
What you hear on the tape is the two hijackers clearly belted into their seats deciding to crash the plane because the passengers were getting into the cockpit.
Now, do you get the sense that the Bush administration cooperated as fully as it could have with the 9/11 Commission?
Well, we had to issue subpoenas, so I think that kind of speaks for itself.
They resisted initially, but then they after you issue subpoenas, people either cooperate or they still resist.
Yes, and they did. We received the primary source material we sought and were able to reconstruct the facts of the day.
And you suggest that NORAD intentionally deceived you and the 9/11 Commission about the existence of tapes that recorded how Northeast Aid Defense Sector, or is it NEADS?
Is that how NEADS is the short
responded
term, yes.
to 9/11?
Well, we were initially told, the commission was told in a hearing that that tapes were not made on the floor that day. And when we went up to Rome, New York, we found that, in fact, they had been.
So they just lied to you?
Well, they either lied or didn't know.
Yeah, but
it's the choice of something diabolical or incompetent, and you can take your pick as to which is worse.
But, this is one of the most important days in U.S. history. And you would think that even if it's going to be embarrassing to people, that they would want to get to the truth of the matter.
Well, what's disturbing to me to this day is that the military of all branches of the United States government is known for reconstructing what happened afterwards and trying to learn from it. And to take them at their word that they simply reconstructed it wrong, how do you learn from that?
Did you try to get people at the top levels of the government to testify? I seem to remember President Bush and Vice President Cheney refused to testify under oath.
Well, they testified before the commission, but it was in a separate kind of session. I wasn't not president that session, so.
And it wasn't under oath, though, because it would have been demeaning to them or because they refused?
I don't know.
In the end, I guess nobody would have said, well, they really were responsible. But I guess everybody was a bit embarrassed that more hadn't been done.
Well, clearly it was a tragic day, and I think there were efforts undertaken for 10 years before 9/11 to try to anticipate it, but everyone failed.
Well, in our popular culture, there's a conception that disaster response is handled by the president giving out orders in some dark room under the White House or in the Pentagon. But I suspect that's not the way these disasters are handled in the real world. Well, first of all, the president was reading a book to some kids at the time, so he couldn't do that.
No, he wasn't in Washington that whole day. So the vice president was in the bunker, and he was making a lot of important decisions. But I think that you make an important point, which is, and really the reason I wrote this book, is I think we have to start to plan for these crises the way we now know they're actually going to be lived, where people below the top commanders are going to have to make critical decisions because there simply isn't time to go up the chain of command and back down.
Well, it seems to me it's human nature for there to be a real tight security right after something like this happens. And then we get more and more relaxed. And I don't know what's going on in the Obama administration right now and whether they have learned the lessons of 9/11. But we've seen this with economic bubbles. Everybody starts saving money after there's a major crash. And then 10 years later, we're throwing money at some stupid scheme once again.
Well, I think complacency is the big enemy of preparedness and something we have to guard against. And one of the important reasons to remember on 9/11 is to awaken us from whatever sense of complacency we've fallen into and remind ourselves that we have to be prepared. I think one area that we can do a lot better in is informing the public from the age of 12 on up how to think in a crisis, because the people who know fare better.
As I recall, the Bush administration said Vice President Cheney had cleared authorization with President Bush to shoot down any more hijacked planes. Does that pan out?
Well, the way that the authorization was handed down, it did say Vice President has authorized. The President and the Vice President both remember the President authorizing him to do that. That conversation is not memorialized anywhere, so there's no way to prove it. But the way it was actually communicated was that the authorization came from the Vice President. And in any event, it was in half an hour after the final plane had crashed.
My guest is John Farmer, senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission. His book, The Ground Truth, The Untold Story of America Under Attack on 9/11, it's published by Riverhead Books. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with John Farmer, former counsel to the 9/11 Commission. He's written a book called The Ground Truth, The Untold Story of America Under Attack on 9/11. It's published by Riverhead Books. How did agencies like the FAA and NORAD recommend flight crews deal with hijackers before 9/11. Were there any plans in effect?
Yeah, there had been a history of hijackings, and protocols had been developed based upon that history. And they really – the protocols called for the scrambling of airplanes to essentially escort the hijacked plane to its safe landing because no one had tried to commit suicide in a commercial jet before.
They were mostly hijacking them to go to Cuba or some other place.
Precisely.
And here suddenly – well, nobody imagined that hijackers would try to fly a whole bunch of planes into buildings and kill themselves.
And do what they did, which was go turn off the radar and go incommunicado. Usually the hijackers wanted to be heard, and usually they had specific demands they wanted to be met. So all of this caused the defenders that day to improvise. And, you know, given the constraints in which they were operating of doctrine, they did a tremendous job.
So considering everything, what we might have imagined would take place and all of the things, I guess based on what had happened before, how would you grade how our government handled 9/11?
Well, I feel pretty strongly that with respect to national security, you can't grade on the curve. It's a pass-fail proposition, and so the grade's is a failure.
Now, this was a failure, but the Bush administration wasn't punished for it. It was Hurricane Katrina that really caused it so much trouble. But do you see them as analogous?
Well, I do draw in the book some parallels between the way the response to Katrina and the way the response to 9/11 were handled. And I think the parallels are important because they're such different events. So when you have something like Katrina, which was not a surprise, which was anticipated for decades and planned for, and you have the same kind of estrangement between the officials at the top and those on the ground, the same disconnects of communication, it tells you something about the way we handle crises that needs to be changed.
Both the Department of Defense and the Department of Transportation Inspector Generals released reports on whether any government officials knowingly lied to or misled the public about the facts of how 9/11 was handled. What did their reports find?
Well, the Department of Defense report found that the record-keeping system that was in place was not adequate to enable them to reconstruct accurately the events of the morning. And as I try to lay out in the book, I simply disagree with that conclusion. I think the facts of the morning were apparent on the records and tapes of that day.
In fact, you conclude in the book that, and I'm quoting, at some level of government, at some point in time, there was a decision not to tell the truth about what happened on 9/11.
I think that's the overwhelming weight of the evidence, yes.
So do you have any idea what level of government we're talking about?
Well, there are a number of possibilities, and having been in government, I've seen and the way these things can play out. It could be that the two departments simply were embarrassed by what happened and before they got to the White House conjured up this scenario, or it could have been directed from above.
Well, you don't prosecute for incompetence. Is that why we haven't seen anybody really punished? I mean, we did see some people punished. After Hurricane Katrina, people lost their jobs. But nobody lost a job here, as far as I can remember.
Directly as a result of 9/11, I don't think so.
You say bacchanalia of blame took place after 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina. So there were blame in both cases. Why do you think the response was different?
Well, I think, you know, I think that's a culture that we've sort of fallen into. And what I try to point out in the book is that when you have – if you had one department that clearly failed – and in a crisis, and you can lay blame on that person, that's fine. But what we have across many different departments, across different kinds of crises, the same kinds of failure, you're dealing with something much more fundamental than simply an incompetent bureaucrat at the top.
Now, because of all the inconsistencies, there have been numerous conspiracy theories that continue to you can find them all over the internet. Some of them say that the government intentionally allowed 9/11 to happen, even fabricated the event, that the towers could not have fallen the way they did unless they had been tampered with. You're not arguing any of those things, are you?
Absolutely not. In fact, I challenge anyone to read the book and conclude the government was capable of anything that elaborate.
But you're saying the government's too incompetent to have done something that smart.
I think that's the case.
Well, you've worked in government. Nodding your head.
Yes.
So have you seen this kind of incompetence in other areas?
What I have seen on a smaller scale.
You worked in New Jersey.
Yes.
A state that has had a lot of serious problems.
Yes. And
including a fair number of arrests recently.
It's a great state in many ways, but we do have our legacy of corruption to deal with, and we do have our fair share of problems. What I did experience in New Jersey is how difficult it is to change a bureaucratic culture. And that's what the government was attempting to do throughout the 1990s and into the new century, and a scale that I couldn't even imagine as a state official. And they just couldn't do it.
Do you think the government did anything well on 9/11 and after?
Yes, absolutely. The FAA controllers did a fantastic job of landing 4,000 planes, not according to flight plans, without incident. That is one of the truly heroic happenstances of 9/11. And generally speaking, the folks performing on the ground did a fantastic job. The firefighters in New York and the first responders in New York, the firefighters and first responders in Washington. You can't say enough about what these folks did. And that's why it's so important to remember days like today. But the part that really where the national command structure was concerned did not function adequately that day.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you're talking about is people individually doing heroic things, but government not functioning well. Do you think security agencies are always anticipating the last attack? Is that part of the problem? I mean, perhaps if I were Osama bin Laden, I'd say, hey, let's not do that again. Let's do something else.
Well, that is the dilemma, because it's easy to fix the last problem. It's easy to solve the 9/11 problem, which they have. I mean, the air defense system now has been shorn up dramatically since 9/11. And our response to the last Gulf hurricane was much better than it was in Katrina. But the question is, the open question is always, have the lessons you've learned been articulated so that when a new crisis hits of a different magnitude and a different style, the bureaucracy can respond better? And that's an open question.
John Farmer is senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission. His book, The Ground Truth, The Untold Story of America Under Attack on 9/11. It is published by Riverhead Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In the years since 9/11, there have been a major government commission into the attacks, the creation of a new bureaucracy that was one of the largest organizations or reorganizations of government since the Cold War. We have rewritten our national security laws. There have been two major wars blamed on what happened on 9/11. Do you think that in spite of all of that, much has really changed in government?
I don't know that government, the way government actually functions has changed all that much. You know, during the Clinton administration, there was a great emphasis on reinventing government and a very aggressive move to do that in light of the fact that the government had gotten so big and, in the view of many, so unresponsive. They had made some significant progress. They reorganized FEMA in a great way. But those efforts fell short in terms of reorganizing our national security apparatus. That's what I think we need to get back to make government more efficient and respond to crises the way they're actually lived from the ground up and not from the top down.
Well, FEMA was reorganized, but then it was undermined by the next administration.
I think, unfortunately, it was moved and folded into the Department of Homeland Security, which created a buffer, another layer of bureaucracy between FEMA and the president. I thought that was unfortunate. But when I dealt with FEMA as attorney general, they were a fantastic agency.
Well, part of the problem, as we saw after Hurricane Katrina, is that the people in charge in many cases were just hack political appointees. And that it doesn't matter how good government is organized if the people who are running the departments don't
true.
Know what they're doing.
That is true. There's always a human factor, and you have to be committed to hiring the right people for the right jobs.
It seems to me that the message I get from this book is perhaps we could not have predicted what happened. But the government response, lying, is something that we really cannot accept in the future.
If there's one thing I would wish people would take away from this, it's that we need to demand candor and accountability from the government.
And that's something that you were trying to get when you were on the commission. Yeah. Did you just assume that you were getting it, or did you feel frustrated?
We were ultimately frustrated. We agreed to give people the benefit of the doubt in early days until they proved otherwise, and in this case, they did. And I have to say, the lack of candor, you know, cut across parties and administrations. You had Sandy Berger, the National Security Advisor from the Clinton administration, sealing documents from the National Archives before he was testifying before the commission and hiding them at a construction site so that he could destroy them later. I mean,
everybody's out there protecting his butt.
It's a culture, and that needs to be changed.
Well, maybe your book will help change it. Meanwhile, I was a bit concerned talking about some of these things on 9/11 because there are people who feel right now that we should not be mulling over all of this stuff again. What's your response to that?
Particularly today, it's a very, very painful thing to look back. Certainly anyone who was in this area that day, as I was, as you were, it's a very painful thing to remember. But I think it's necessary, and I think it's important to guard against that sense of complacency that you talked about earlier that sets in, and really as a tribute to the people who lost their lives that day trying to help others and who were victims of the attacks. I think it's important that we try as hard as we can to learn the right lessons from them.
John Farmer served as senior counsel to the 9/11 Commission. He is now dean of the Rutgers University Law School, but he has also served as Attorney General of New Jersey, as chief counsel to Governor Christine Todd Whitman, as a federal prosecutor, and as an advisor to the Special Envoy for Middle East Regional Security. His book, The Ground Truth, The Untold Story of America Under Attack on 9/11, is published by Riverhead Books, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.